For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning. Welcome. I want to speak this morning about bodhisattva response and responsiveness. So how to respond as bodhisattva practitioners, as practitioners dedicated to universal awakening for all beings. And I want to start by commenting a bit on the talk that Brooke Seporin gave here Monday evening. A few of you were here anyway, and it's available already on the website, on the podcast, including a link to his handout. So it was a talk about the four teachings of Chinese Chantai Buddhism, which is kind of in the background of all Japanese Buddhism too. But I wanted to focus on there are four parts: the basic teachings, four noble truths, and basic teachings like that. The so-called Theravada, well, the early teaching, pre-Mahayana teachings, then the early Mahayana teachings, focusing on emptiness. But I wanted to talk about the third and fourth, particularly the third. This is just a summary. You can listen to Brooke's talk, but this is the what's sometimes called the separate teaching or the special teaching, responding to the Four Noble Truths, to the suffering of the world, and so forth. In terms of the immeasurable variety of beings. And this is the realm of the bodhisattvas, who recognize Buddha nature and respond to all beings, particularly, and I'll talk more about that. But then what I wanted to comment on was the fourth branch of that teaching, the perfect or round teaching, which is sees that all things are beyond being unborn, that all things are infinite. So this is the what I would call the Dharmakaya ultimate teaching, the beginninglessness of all things. Brooke was talking about this in terms of temporality and time periods. This is the sense of the ultimate unbeginning of all things and unending of all things. So this is the ultimate Dharmakaya view of the whole universe as Buddha, as perfect, as whole. But what I want to say is that there's a way in which the fourth teaching returns to the third. So it's possible to do bodhisattva teaching in the way that the third teaching comes up, in terms of seeing the suffering of all beings. And the differences between these are subtle, so this is a kind of advanced teaching. But it's possible also, once one has seen the perfect round teaching or glimpsed it, to then just return back to bodhisattva teaching. One doesn't abide in the ultimate teaching. So this is a turn I wanted to give beyond what Brooke was talking about, that from the point of view of our practice, whatever glimpse we have of this ultimate universal reality, we come back to recognizing that there are ways in which there are beings who are suffering, and that we including ourselves, and we see the Buddha nature of all of that, and come back to Bodhisattva teachings. So that's by way of introduction. What is the way to respond to the difficulties in our own lives and the difficulties in amongst our friends and family and in the world as a whole? So these Bodhisattva teachings, one way to see this is from the great Zen master Yunmen, who was one of the founder of one of the five houses, lived 864 to 949, so classic Chan teacher, and known for short answers, although he also gave longer talks. And there's a case in the Blue Cliff Record, case 14, in which a student asks him, "What is the teaching of a whole lifetime?" Or we could hear that as, "What is the teaching of the Buddha's whole lifetime?" And Yunmen said, an appropriate statement or an appropriate response. Literally, the teaching meets each event, each time, each season, each situation. So rather than holding out some motto or some formulation of a teaching that applies to everyone from this perspective of returning from this universal, to respond appropriately. So this is one basic way to see how to respond from a Bodhisattva perspective. What is appropriate? Now, that's not necessarily always easy to see. How do we, in any situation, see an appropriate response? It is said that every statement by Yunmen has three aspects. So one way these are described is that each statement encompasses heaven and earth. That each statement of Yunmen, or each appropriate statement of the Buddha, we could say, follows the waves. Or each statement or response cuts off the myriad streams. So this is a poetic way of saying it. To unpack that a little bit, each response that encompasses heaven and earth includes everything. How do we respond in a way that recognizes and includes all being, all reality, all perspectives? So that's one aspect. The second aspect, following the waves, is to, well, we say, go with the flow. To recognize the situation in terms of how ordinary flowing of the world, the ordinary way of in which the world sees things. So that's the second, to go with the flow. And the third, to cut off the myriad streams, is to get right to the point, to focus. So all of the distractions, all of the myriad possibilities, to just get down to what's really important. So these are the three aspects of Yunmen's statements and of all appropriate statements. So I'll read a little bit from Yunmen's recorded sayings. There's a new translation out from, actually, this is a book that he did a while ago, but Wisdom has republished it by Urs App, who is a fine Buddhist scholar who I met when I was living in Kyoto. He starts this section corresponding to the occasion that unmen is how he say it in Japanese. Unmen took the Dharma seat to give a talk, and he remained silent for a long time. Then he said, the knack of giving voice to the way is definitely difficult to figure out. Even if every word matches it, there still are a multitude of other ways. How much more so when I rattle on and on. So what's the point of talking to you right now? So I could stop right there. There are a multitude of ways. There's not one right perspective. So again, he says, even if every word matches it, there still are a multitude of other ways. How do we recognize all the skillful means, all of the different perspectives, the different needs and viewpoints about any situation, any problem we want to respond to? And then, what is it that's appropriate? So, Hearst translates that story. Yunmen was asked, what is the teaching of the Buddha's whole lifetime? And Yunmen said, speaking in tune with any particular occasion. How do we find accord with the particular situation, the particular problem, whether it's in our own life, our life of the people around us, or in our society or world at large? Right after that, the next entry, someone asked Master Yunmen, what is the eye of the genuine teaching? And Yunmen said, everything. So again, everything's included. How do we respond? So our practice, you know, this basic practice that we do in our tradition of just sitting upright, expressing Buddha on our seat, with this body and mind. Gives us support to find appropriate response. It allows us some sense of calm. Just the fact of being able to sit, not being able, but showing up to sit upright, like Buddha, face the wall, face our lives, face the world, pay attention. There's a calm that's there. There's a clarity that's there. We listen. So our eyes are, we sit with our eyes open in the same way that we sit with our ears open. We listen to the whole situation. And this allows some flexibility, some sense of different ways of responding. We don't have to get stuck in one approach or one method or one formulation. How do we listen to our own thoughts and feelings, our own physical sensations, our reflections on our situation today, this week, this world? And then what is the effort involved in that? So there's various aspects of this appropriate response. There's the immediacy, just, hey, how do I respond to this person or this situation? But there's also some effort to be spontaneous, to go beyond our planning and our sense of control. What is that effort and what is that intention? How do we find our deepest way of responding, of listening, of finding appropriate response. So this is bodhisattva response, an appropriate response that's informed by awareness of our own intention, our awareness of including everything, our awareness of going along with the situation, the time and season, the particular event, and also not being distracted, getting to the point, without having some plan, without trying to control things. So this works on many levels. It works and it doesn't work, because part of appropriate response is then, oh, well, there was some way in which that wasn't quite totally appropriate, or it's not appropriate. In the next minute, it may not be appropriate. We have to be willing to respond differently as the situation changes. So Brooke was talking about impermanence and permanence. In some ways, it's set that the situation is changing, and that doesn't change. But how do we find our seat, our place of response to what is appropriate? So, again, this works, you know, in terms of our own personal situation. When we have personal fears or confusions or problems, when we have disappointments, when we face some particular sadness in our own life, or when we face some particular joy, how do we respond to that too? How do we find our own way of, without programming anything, just being present and responding to the sounds of our life? Of course, this applies also not just personally, but communally, collectively. And we are challenged in that collective response very deeply now in this time and season, in these appropriate situations. How do we respond to the massive injustice and prejudice in our society? How do we support those who are subject to that injustice, who are not given a fair chance to find their own response? And then there's the existential threat of climate damage, which, you know, I won't say so much about now, but just to note that amongst my fellow Soto Zen teachers, there are now there's now a lot of discussion about how do we respond. And in California and the West Coast generally, where with the wildfires, they've maybe they're more susceptible to climate catastrophes, although that's coming for our whole species. There are sanghas where the teachers are trying to devote all the energy of the whole sangha to response to the climate damage. So just to report that, and that there's discussions about this, and I'm happy to talk about this here. But I also feel like to bring up our tradition of practice and these guidelines, for example, of Yuen Men's appropriate response, is also part of our work to keep alive both the response to the really critical damage around us, and to our mission, in a sense, of keeping alive a practice and teaching tradition that allows us to hear about appropriate response and allows us to find our own way. So we each have our own appropriate response, just like I can't tell any of you how to be Buddha. That's something that is uncovered and arises from your own seat as you sit like Buddha. So we each have different appropriate responses. And then this week, we've been responding collectively to this threat of pandemic that is all over the news, and we know about this coronavirus. So people in this Sangha have, in discussion, board members and practice leaders, we've put out a statement about that. Thank you, Douglas. And we have sanitary hand material in the front and back, and you know, please wash your hands regularly. And so this is about just responding to that situation appropriately. And you know, as the situation changes, there may be further appropriate responses. But we try and take care of each other and the situation, and try and promote health. And so all of this is part of, well, what is the bodhisattva response? How do we find our way to be present and respond helpfully to ourselves and to so-called others? Actually, the fourth of Brooks' teachings is about how we're not at all separate. That's actually part of the third, too, how we're not separate. So obviously, if somebody is sick in the situation of a bad virus, that can affect everybody in the room. How do we take care of that? That's a very clear example, but even more subtly, when someone is awake in the zendo, when someone's really deeply awake, just sitting there facing the wall, that affects everybody in the room too. How do we find our way to respond appropriately? How do we find our effort without pushing things around, without trying to manipulate things, in a way that is open and listening and flexible and willing to change with the situation? So this is a subtle issue. And for me, part of appropriate response today is to say a little bit about this, but then I also want to hear from all of you, your perspectives. So part of my appropriate response to considering response is to hear your response. So I want to invite everyone to share reflections or comments or questions about this basic issue. How do we respond to the situations in our life and in the world? So I will stop now, as Yunmin recommended, and anyone who has any comments, please feel free. You can respond to any particular situation that comes up for you in terms of this talk, but also to the principle of an appropriate response. Yes, Bo.
Well, I appreciate the talk in general, and then toward the latter part of it, you mentioned an appropriate response without trying to manipulate a situation. And to me, that's kind of the subtlety of this. You know, it's like you want to respond to different situations, large or small, without kind of grasping, wanting to change something to your kind of personal preference or view, or, like you said, manipulating it. And I think that's really challenging, difficult. In my own life, it's like I see things out there that I want to change very badly, but then it's like this process of constant kind of reflection, so that you're not grasping so much on this idea that you have of how things should be, that it you know, kind of narrows your view so much. So that's really helpful to me, to think about, like, what are my actions? Are they, you know, I don't know the right word, authentic or whatever, but not so manipulative, not so needy for that change, to kind of have this constant process of, yes, attending, but then sort of seeing in a much larger view, too. I don't know if that makes sense. But.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so I think it's okay if we have ideas about or views of how things should be or how things might be. But when we want to control, manipulate things to reach some particular outcome, we get caught because the world is alive. So we don't know. We don't necessarily know the results or effects of all of our actions or responses, and yet we can, you know, try without so that's subtle, the thing about manipulating. It's we can try and encourage certain directions and certain possibilities, but to know that we don't control the outcome, that reality has its own natural process. It has its own waves to follow. It has its own streams to cut off. So it's subtle. Thank you. Yes, Douglas.
I've been thinking about these issues a good bit lately, and I think it's helpful, the idea that we are not separate and that we are part of this interconnectedness and intercausation and interconnection. It's that not only are we part of these difficult situations, but we are actually have effects on the situation. Which helps a little bit to help avoid despair sometimes.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that it seems to me that the fact that we are not separate from the world or from other beings means that we act authentically as less than them. There's disagreement, for example. We have disagreement, or some of us have a disagreement. And acting on that, acting within situations and as part of situations, and as beings who have a relationship with other beings, we're actually enacting the reality of our interconnectedness. It seems to me that that's important.
Yeah, there's a mutuality of all things. So our response is not just our response. Our response is our appropriate response. Our particular response is a function of the particular situation we're in, the particular people we know, the particular context of our lives. So, and yet it's not, it's never just me acting or responding. Couldn't be. Intercausative or whatever with everything. But then the other thing you said about not very important these days to not succumb to despair and feeling like there's nothing to do. There's always some response possible. And everything we do has an effect. And how things change is not so cut and dry or so clear. So part of an appropriate response is that we do respond. Even if you think you don't, you're not responding or you're not involved in some issue or problem in your life or in the world, to not respond is a kind of response too. Or to think you're not responding. That's a kind of response too. So everything that happens is a product of many causes, many beings. Anything that we do, individually or collectively, is also something that will have an effect. And how things will change, even situations that seem really difficult and challenging, we don't know how things will change, and positive changes happen sort of suddenly. I mean, there's so many examples of that, where after a long time of people working at it, something actually shifts. So I don't know, I could give many examples. The fact that 100 years ago, it was only 100 years ago this year that women were allowed to vote. Before that, women just weren't capable of exercising the right to vote. That just was assumed. And of course, many women marched and lobbied, and you know, there was a long, long movement that eventually culminated 100 years ago this year in women being able to legally have the right to vote. So that's historical, and you know, a more recent example is gay marriage, which would have been thought as, which was thought of as, you know, impossible not that long ago. But then even the Supreme Court said, "Oh yeah, sure, why not? Let people who love each other get married, regardless of, you know, gender preference or whatever." So there's lots and lots and lots of examples in between those two, and before, and later, coming. So yes, Aishin.
I was reading something this week that I'm going to not quote perfectly, but it was suggesting that our sort of ordinary ways to resist everything that's happening and changing, and we'll try to hold on to, you know, something, and that a more enlightened way of being would be to accept everything that's happening and changing. And I think we can get caught with those two things, because, and it's sort of subtle, like the difference between changing something and manipulating something.
Right.
You know, it's like we have to constantly observe ourselves and constantly do that as we try to change something, so that we can observe it, so that we can, you know, accept it as it is, mean by way of understanding what comes together to make that, and then, you know, by trying to help stretch it or help build a bridge so that maybe it can move into something else, but not resisting, you know, what it is. And it's just very,
yeah,
very minute.
Yeah, and complex. And so anything, any situation I name, just to name it is to miss the point, because it's so complex. But as you were talking, I was thinking, so resisting and accepting, part of what's happening in our country now is this massive, so the white supremacy movement, for example, which is, you know, filled with hate for non-whites, because white people feel like they're losing their, excuse me for this gross example, but, you know, that, so that produces lots of hate. That's a kind of movement of resistance. Just to accept that is not the point either. So how do we accept things, not passively, but in a dynamic way, where we can speak or act against something that is harmful, but also recognize all the ways, all of the streams that have led to that, and recognize the pain of the people who are caught in that, and then how do we shift or change that without, you know, we can't control exactly the results of how that will change, but how do we respond? So what is an appropriate response to these things? Yes, Aishin.
I see that on all different kinds of levels, but the one that I can respond on is...
You don't have to take it back now.
How do we meet a particular being and accept that their life circumstances have given them a particular worldview, and that particular worldview may involve some helpful elements but may involve some very harmful elements, and how do we help maybe create a different experience so that their worldview can change?
A different experience, yeah.
Forcing them to change it.
Yeah, a different perspective. So part of all of this is just awareness. The more we are aware of our own perspective and the different aspects of what's happening in any situation, And then how do we share awareness so people will be more aware of the possibility of kindness and caring and working together? Other comments or appropriate or semi-appropriate statements? Yes, Brian.
Sometimes I'm aware of how, for me, the difference between maybe working to change something and trying to manipulate or being attaching an outcome has to do with whether or not I spend the time to look at my own baggage.
Mm-hmm.
If I do that, if I really am honest, and I mean, so often, you know, I face a situation where X is just wrong and it needs to be changed, period. But if my motivation is partly grounded in my own fear or anger or some association with something that's, you know, deep within me, and then I'm acting, I'm reacting my consciousness part.
Yes.
And if I could get to that and find out what, you know, be humble enough to say, what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? Then I can actually engage in a way that isn't manipulative.
Right. Yeah, so that's, you know, one of the major aspects of this practice of Zazen, of just sitting upright and paying attention, is that we see that stuff. We see our own baggage. We see our own fears. We see our own prejudices, our own opinions. They might be very, very good opinions, but that's just an opinion, you know, and it may not be helpful.
Well, it might be a good opinion that needs to, and something acts like something that really does need to change and wrong, but we muddy the waters with our own attachments and fears and
right.
Anything else that makes a mess out of it.
Yeah. What's that physicist who did Cosmos? I saw him. Who's that?
Sagan?
No, not Carl Sagan. The current...
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, yeah. I saw him talking about the difference between us, between opinions and, what's the other word? Perspectives, or viewpoints that are grounded. So he has perspectives based on scientific knowledge. And it's not that it's just his opinion. It's, you may or may not like that perspective, but it's something that's, you know, true scientifically. Anyway, that's just another wrinkle on this. That how do we see? There are things that are, from the point of view of conventional truth, of arising and perishing of things, cause and effect. There are things that are true. But then we might have opinions about those, and that's something else. Anyway, just to throw that in. Thank you, Jason.
Somewhere in your talk, at this point in time, I can't remember exactly what you had said, but it was the teaching of the true Dharma eye, or something along those lines. It's sort of a naive thing to strike me, because you talk about the true Dharma eye in so many ways, and it's titled Shobhagandha. But the connection between teaching and the eye struck me as being kind of wild, because the eye is such a passive organ.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, I don't think so anymore. But I always thought of the eye as a way to consume the world and take it all in.
Right.
That my notion of teaching, you know, it's either with utterance or like showing your body, your actions, and things like that.
Right.
And this conversation and this talk that you gave really spun the notion of I consuming and teaching what that is, especially in what everyone is kind of talking about.
Well, I think what I was talking about was the Dharmakaya, which is the Dharma body, the true body of ultimate. But I think bringing in the Dharma eye is relevant. How do we see in a way that is open to meeting? So another way of translating appropriate is to meet each thing. The teacher meets each. Or the teaching meets each thing. How do we see and... You know, Dogen talks about carrying the self forward and experiencing things, to project, you know. And in the sutras, some of the sutras, there's a light that emanates from the Buddha's eyes. So we do have the tendency to see from the particular context that we... particular preconception, a particular context, a particular prejudice of how to see things. But part of Zazen is to just look at the wall, and our idea about what it is we're seeing can shift. So yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting issue that you're raising. How is it that we see? And how is it that we consume and respond? So it's both, you know. We see things in terms of our, you know. Well, the Dogen talks about how we see Lake Michigan in one way, the fish see it in another way, dragons see it in yet another way, and so forth. So we're conditioned and we're limited by our own perceptive training and tradition, as it were. But yeah, part of appropriate response is to open up how we see what the situation is, to see from different, so that means, so listening to other viewpoints is one way that's helpful. But yeah, that's an interesting aspect of this. Yes, hi.
In a similar vein, someone mentioned how to address an individual with maybe harmful viewpoints in such a way that you're not forcing them, but react.
Yeah.
And in a practical level, I've been speaking to a woman who works for a nonprofit. Tries to de-radicalize neo-Nazis and white supremacists. And one of the things that she mentioned, she didn't really put it in its terms, but it put me in mind of the idea that there are skillful means that exist beyond just teaching the frameworks of Buddhism.
Right, sure.
That when you speak to somebody with a vastly different viewpoint from yours, sometimes you have to adopt a skillful mean in communicating your perspective in such a way that they will be receptive to it. And so when she met with some of these individuals who really violently racist perspectives, she would have to entertain what they were saying.
Yes.
And say, well, if that's so, what would it mean if there are these counterexamples that don't really fit into your perspective? What would that make you think? And to treat them as human beings, even despite those vast chasms of difference. I think that's something that's a difficult thing to do, but one that comes with the self-reflection.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Yeah, we have to, you know, it's an appropriate response does not mean, you know, judging someone in terms of how we respond to them. We may have our ideas about this, but then we have to forgive them for, you know, whatever causes and conditions brought them to that, and and see the, as you say, see them as human too. And so how do we, and in terms of the Buddhist jargon, you know, I mean, appropriate response isn't so much jargon, but, you know, we don't have to talk about it as Buddhists, you know, that's not the point. But how to respond to people in ways that they can hear. And that's the real test of this idea of appropriate response. How do we find the response that each meets each, that we can actually recognize in somebody who we, you know, very strongly disagree with, as the example you gave, some commonality or some humanity or some basis for something we can talk about. So that's a very challenging practice that this person you talked about, how that she does. Sometimes appropriate response may be when we're not ready to respond to someone who we disagree with that strong, just to not try to, you know, to try and convert somebody to my viewpoint or to some other viewpoint without acknowledging the complexity of their humanity is not an appropriate response. So, yeah, thank you for that. This is, you know, it's on some level it seems very easy. Just okay, there's a kind of spontaneous okay. I'm just going to respond to what's in front of me. But when that is something very disturbing, then how do we? What is skillful response? And often that means patience. Which again, just like the eye is not, this is the way in which the eye is not passive. Patience is to pay attention and be ready to respond when we see some way to respond. Sometimes there's not. So this is subtle. Thank you. We're sort of at time, but if anybody else has some last comment or response or question or reflection, please. Yes, Bill.
I just want to, this maybe is an apropos of your talk, but I just wanted to kind of appreciate, I feel like it's a really difficult time and it's easy to get caught up in lots of talk and worry and anxiety. And today, just sitting in the Zendo, I just appreciate so much the silence.
Yes.
And sitting in in a Sangha and quiet and silence, I just felt really today the power of that. So I just wanted to.
Yeah, silence can be a very appropriate response. Yes, David, last word.
What you just said reminded me of something. There's so much talk, and not just talk, it's vindictive speech that's going on back and forth on all sides. How do we, from a bodhisattva perspective, handle that? How do we not get caught up in that? You know, as I'm sure there's many of us who are partisan in one way or the other, and we wind up getting caught up in our own side. How do we do that from a bodhisattva perspective?
Yeah, recognize, I would just say recognize that you have some side that you believe or whatever, and don't hang on to it too tightly. You know, be willing to shift and be flexible. I think that's helpful, and to not try and not trying to impose my viewpoint on someone else. If we disagree, and the example you gave is really strong, but when we disagree, we can talk about it in a way that recognizes the other person's humanity and to actually listen as well as share our truth. So
listen.
It doesn't mean to give up and become passive, but how do we respond in a way that we can, you know, hear that we just have one perspective and we may feel it strongly, but how do we express that in a way that recognizes the other person's perspective? So this is challenging stuff, and this is, you know, very much, you know, the challenge of our time in this year and all the conflict, and it's an election year on top of everything else. So please take care and try to respond to your appropriate response. So thank you all very much.